Good evening, James McKenney here with my Science Hour. This is for the first show of 2018, January 4th. And tonight's main science topic, I will be talking about the future and I believe to be a very bright future. So for literally decades, we've been looking at gloom and doom and disaster and other things. And right now I see brightness on the horizon, and of course that could change. And of course the other topic I'll be discussing is the tremendous winter storm and issues related to that. But wow, so for some people things are not so bright right now, but that means I may have many, many more listeners than normal because people are sitting at home. They're, you know, looking for something to do. So welcome if you're a new listener. And the archives for this show go back probably over 17 years. They're on my webpage, jmccsci.com. And new listeners come from all directions, from recommendations, from people just scanning the dial or, searching the internet. A lot of people have come to listen to me as regulars from disinformation sites that blast my name, you know, and they go, well, gee, what's this? This guy sure sounds terrible. Let's go see what he's all about. And they get to my webpage and they go, wait a minute, this guy makes a lot of sense. And then they become regular listeners. So I appreciate all those people, as they say in Hollywood, any advertisement is good advertisement, because in Hollywood, you know, they put the stars up on the front of Inquirer magazine, you know, and some, terrible story about the stars or what they've done this week or their tragedy in their life or something. And the stars actually revel in that because it's free advertisement. And then people go, oh, that gets their name in the news. And 2 days later, people don't remember why they heard about Brad Pitt or Angelina Jolie or all the mirage of stars out there. And so as they say in Hollywood, any advertisement is good advertisement. Ford said that. The original Henry Ford said, I don't care what you say about me, just say Ford. So it was somewhat the same idea. So a lot of people have come to listen to this show from negative bashing that goes on because I'm quite successful and bringing my message to the public directly, not through standard news media. And this show, you will find, is commercial free. I don't have sponsors. I don't have advertisers. Okay, so on to the main science topic. Now, there's something going on, and this has gone on before, so just a little political. I don't know if it's political, but remember an event on September 11th back in 2001? A little incident in New York City. I imagine most of you remember that. The airplanes crashing into buildings or whatever happened there. I mean, certainly a lot more was going on than what meets the eye. But this past week, or maybe 2 weeks ago, within the last couple of weeks, a suit has been filed in federal court against a very long laundry list of suspects, let's just put it that way, in the 9/11 event, not the least of which is the Bushes and the Clintons. But the way I see this also is this could be what the Clintons used to term back in the 80s when they were in Arkansas. They called it rope-a-dope. And so when the Clintons got in trouble, what they do is they sit down with their team of attorneys and people who protected them, people who ran interference for them. And they would create a fake, basically, trial, a court trial, and haul them into court and try them for whatever the allegation was, but in a court where they knew that they would win. And so that's what I see. And they called it rope-a-dope. Now, rope is like when you're a cowboy, you're roping a steer. You're basically throwing a lasso out and capturing that little animal and the doggy, so to speak, and to brand him or give him a shot, an injection, or whatever's going on the range that day. So that's the roping part. So they rope a dope. Now, a dope is an idiot, a person who gets duped. So a rope-a-dope is their term for creating a false story, a false narrative, and then exonerating themselves because there's an issue called, in the court system, called double jeopardy. You cannot be tried twice for the same crime. So they would set up a false court case in which they would be exonerated, and then nobody else could bring real charges against them for that particular set of crimes. And that's what appears to be what's going on here. And so anyway, when you hear stories about all these people being arrested or indicted, the way I see that, I would say keep your eyes out for a rope-a-dope. Okay. Noctilucent clouds. Now, I've talked about these before, but they somewhat have a season, especially at the South Pole and the North Pole. And standard science explains this as being meteors coming into the atmosphere, dumping off or breaking up and creating powder, which then, fill in the blank, because they really don't tell you what causes these electrical, basically auroral type conditions up in the upper atmosphere. But you can see them. You can see them from the ground. You can see them from outer space. If you're up in the region, if they're above the horizon, in other words, you'd have to be close to the South Pole for these to be on your horizon. And so that would mean you'd have to be in Patagonia, southern part of South America, and not many people go there. It's a very difficult region to get to and to have ability to see the noctilucent clouds, even though they're very high in the atmosphere. And the same in the North Pole. You'd have to be up in, there's only a few countries that go up that far with population. So the what we call the Scandinavian countries would have a shot at it if they live in northern, or say Lapland or other places like that. Then they would get a shot at seeing the noctilucent clouds. But what are they really? They are really electrical conditions in the upper atmosphere. And it's kind of funny because even on spaceweather.com, which is a totally controlled government mouthpiece for standard science, which prohibits the use of the term electric, they finally have to come down and say, use the term electric, because they are electrical. And so anyway, what they're doing, this is what I call the creeping crud. This is where standard science or standard news reporting of science starts creeping in, and they start using a term, and it usually comes in the news media as opposed to the peer-reviewed standard journals. And then it becomes politically correct to use the word electrical. Then it can start creeping into the so-called respectable peer-reviewed journals, and everybody's happy. So it's a way of creeping into a realm, electrical conditions in the solar system, where they have been prohibited previously, but then they can take over that realm like they are trying to do with the UFO topic, for example. NASA wants to be the expert on UFOs, which I think is comical, because for decades they have patently denied that anything related to UFOs or aliens could possibly exist. And I'm not saying they exist or don't exist. I'm just saying this was NASA's stand, and it was a political stand. So anyway, and also the topic of Planet X, which is comical. For decades, NASA has patently denied that there could be any such thing as an extra solar system object that could come in and do damage. Yet they're the first ones to step up to the plate and say they have search programs and they've discovered literally hundreds of new planets outside our solar system that are orbiting our sun. So there are new planets, some of them big, and they on purpose demoted Pluto from being a planet, which was our ninth planet. Most of you probably learned that in grade school, that there were nine planets, and you can name them off: Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, the ninth little planet out there. But Pluto was demoted from being a planet. And the reason being that all of a sudden they had 40 or more at the time, this is back a decade ago, they had 40 or more Pluto-sized planets out there. And so all of a sudden, the teaching that there were nine planets would have to go to 49 planets. And that would cause people to start scratching their heads. And of course, the immediate question would be, well, could any of these come into the inner solar system and affect Earth? And then the next planet, now here's the clincher, here's the punchline, here's the kick in the drawers, that the next one would have to be called Planet 10 or Planet X. So they wanted to get away from that. So if they got Pluto away from being Planet 9, then the next discovered planet would be Planet 9. And they could forget about this Planet X term, which they desperately wanted to avoid talking about. Anyway, that's the short story. But there again, so NASA comes out a couple weeks ago and decides they want to be the experts on Planet X. And they go, now, anytime you want to know about Planet X, you come to NASA, because they're going to have all the answers for you. Anyway, just comical to see the charades that go on out there in the real world of the so-called real world of science. But on to the main science topic now. The big storm up in the whole United States is getting slammed. And when I used to be a kid, I still remember it. It's still within my memory bank, being a kid up in the Minnesota, the what we called an Alberta Clipper. Now, that's what this is. This is a jet stream that goes up high into the Arctic, typically up to the Arctic Circle or thereabouts, or sometimes even farther. And then it swings down and it drags all that cold air down into the central United States. Now, there was a point at which the western states were not being affected, but most of them are being affected now by this wide-ranging jet stream. Now, I've got some pictures on my webpage. You can go see those, scroll down, and to the center column. At the top of my webpage, I have some information, and then there's some points of interest, etc. And then below that, my webpage is divided into three columns. And so scroll down in that central column that has the link on how to listen, all the different ways to listen to my radio show. It has the link to all of the archives, which are posted on my radio show, all of this free, and commercial free, by the way. And then just below that, I have what I call the picture of the day. And so I have pictures of this storm system posted. You can see those. And they also some interesting general interest pictures showing people doing things in the snow up there, various frozen-looking conditions. So you can go to my webpage and see those. It's jmccsci.com, just seven letters. And that's the short version of jmccsci.com. But I got the short URL so that it's easy for people to get there. It's seven letters, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. Okay, so what is causing this? Now, one might imagine, could this be a man-manipulated storm? And the answer is yes. And let me explain what things they can do and how they do this. Is this a man-made manipulated storm? Well, in my way of viewing this, part of it is. And the part that is manipulated is the low-pressure cell that's out in the North Atlantic coming up and bringing hurricane-force winds into the Northeast, which is being paralyzed by this cold, this massive cold air that's being dragged down from Canada by the jet stream. Now, can you control the jet stream? Let me just put it this way. It appears that this is a very natural event in terms of the jet stream pattern, the Alberta Clipper, and it's certainly that time of year. You know, early January, you can expect weather like this. There's no reason to think that this is manipulated, although these conditions can be manipulated and generated. But the part for my view is that the low pressure cell in the North Atlantic that's causing these hurricane force winds, that very likely could be manipulated. And I don't have direct proof that it is. And so that's why I'm saying it's very likely could be. It could be, although these could be natural events, but it's the ability of that low pressure cell to move up and northwest is the strange part about it, because the typical movement of these undulating jet stream patterns is to move easterly, not for a particular low pressure cell to move back northwest and bring it back in the westerly direction. Because the northern jet stream simply move east. So that, to me, is highly suspect. Okay. So at any rate, the temperatures, the wind, and of course, along with this goes damage to the infrastructure. So you have people with houses, and if they lose electricity, then the thermostat on the furnace doesn't light, and they're literally without heat. So there's a lot of that, because what happens is the lines contract, and then there's ice and snow that builds up on them, and they just can't handle the pressure, so they snap. The weight on the telephone poles or the power poles, we call them telephone poles, but typically they're holding the power lines. It's not enough, so the power poles, especially the wooden ones, can snap, because wood becomes very brittle in the cold. So infrastructure damage, and then the resulting damage to homes, frozen pipes, because the average modern home is not built to exist without heat. And there's no way to drain the piping system. The houses are just not built to not have. It's assumed you are always going to have heat in the house. And if you don't, then the biggest problem is pipes, that they're going to break, they're going to rupture, and then you're going to have serious problems in your house, not only with the water problem, but now you have to shut off the water and get a plumber out to each one of these houses to rebuild the plumbing system. So this is not good. And when a power line goes out, it usually could affect hundreds or thousands of homes, sometimes hundreds of thousands of homes. So the end result is not good. And this is probably 2/3 of the United States population affected by this. I've talked to people in Florida, Missouri, other southern states, and they're experiencing severe cold. And of course, Florida, the houses, and throughout the South, the houses are not built for this level of extreme cold. But all of this said, the interesting thing is the terminology that's being used. What they're calling this, and this is new terminology in the news media, in the news reporting and weather reporting, or in general, because, of course, the major news outlets are picking up on this. They're calling it a bomb cyclone. I've seen the term bombogenesis. In other words, the creation of Let's take that word apart. This is being used in the news media, bombogenesis. Genesis means creation, literally. That is the literal understanding when you say that. So what is creating this bomb cyclone, bombogenesis? And it's almost hinting that this is a manipulated storm, that this is being created. Now, without direct evidence, I would not be able to say 100% that this is a manipulated storm. But how do they do this? With laser satellites. This is not HAARP. That's the first thing that rolls off people's lips when they hear of weather manipulation. HAARP is old technology. It's really not used anymore. It was an experiment to redirect energy waves that would bounce off the ionosphere, kind of like shortwave. If you're listening to this show on shortwave, the principle of shortwave is that it bounces off the ionosphere and then bounces back off the surface of the Earth, which is an electrical conductor, and then bounces back up off the ionosphere and then to your location. So the same is true of HAARP. It's basically a series of radio antennas which can be focused and then reunite those energy waves in a certain place, redirect them. It's a directional propagation. And then that energy comes into the atmosphere in another place on the globe. And with that energy input, then certain things can be manipulated. But it's a very crude setup. It's not. It's very difficult to control. And the overall effects are very broad. In other words, you cannot pinpoint the activity with HAARP. So anyway, most people understand my history of working in this field. I have a book called Principia Meteorologia, The Physics of Sun, Earth, Weather, which is written for the general public. And it discusses the laser satellite techniques that basically were developed between myself and Russian scientists back in the 1990s, the mid-90s, to defray hurricane systems from populated areas. But it got into the hands of the wrong people, as you might suspect. And it's the U.S. military, the deep state, that is controlling this. So I see the jet stream and the major structure of this storm as being natural. But it's being enhanced by this very low pressure cell that's coming in from the North Atlantic into the Northeast. And the low pressure cell is one thing that's easy to create with laser satellites. And the way it works is you basically are discharging the vertical electric field of Earth between Earth and the ionosphere, and that causes an uprush of ions from the surface of the Earth, especially when this is done over water like the North Atlantic. And that creates a low pressure cell. It's like a vacuum cleaner sucking up a tube, and this vertical column of air is like basically a hurricane. And that's the natural form of a hurricane. The idea that hurricanes form over warm water is completely ludicrous, has no validity at all. But of course, that's the garbage science that they try and pawn off on you, the public. But as I said, to me, the manipulated part of this whole deal is that low pressure cell, and that's what they're calling the bomb cyclone. And that's, of course, hitting and has been hitting the Northeast all day through this day and continuing, and it'll continue to meet with the other weather systems, which is moisture in the air, and because the jet stream comes down through the central states, comes around down by the Gulf of Mexico, picks up water, and then drags that water up into the Northeast. So you have warm, moisture-laden air coming in from the south and hitting the cold weather that's coming in from the north. and then bringing this low pressure cell, the so-called bomb cyclone, in off the Atlantic Ocean, which has a lot of moisture too. And it's a formula for disaster. These weather systems are colliding. And as I said, in a normal world, this low pressure cell in the North Atlantic would be going easterly off to basically to Ireland and England. And by the time it got there, it would be fairly well dissipated after crossing the very cold North Atlantic Ocean. But that's not what's happening. It's being dragged back northwest into the New England region. And so one might question, well, could the president do something about this? And actually, the president does not have visibility. This is the old deep state that has control of these. When we saw Hurricane Katrina, the hurricane in Houston, in the Florida hurricanes this year, the Hurricane Maria that devastated Puerto Rico. And as I said, isn't it odd that the name of the hurricane that destroyed Puerto Rico was named Maria? And that is no coincidence. That was very much planned from the spring, from last May, or before last, probably April, that that particular storm would be created and designated to destroy Puerto Rico. And the very interesting thing about that is that the hurricanes, the named storms as they are called, these are the ones that get up to hurricane level and then are given a name, which is in a pre-described list, a preset list. They go in alphabetical order. So it's the first hurricane or tropical storm name that reaches naming status is the name begins with A, then B, then C, and up to J, K, L, and then M. And so Maria should be followed by a storm with that begins with the letter L. Is Maria is M, L is the letter before, but there was no L storm. After Maria occurred, because that's the one they wanted to drag into Puerto Rico and have it named Maria, then the L storm hit in 2017. So just a little historical information there. So in my analysis, my professional opinion is that this storm is manipulated. But the other thing is, and I mentioned this on John Moore's show yesterday, when I'm always a guest there Wednesday mornings, I mentioned that I thought that if this were manipulated, could it possibly be the staging area for some type of terrorist activity, some planned terrorist activity? In other words, when the country is down, kick them. And so I'm just wondering if somewhere in the background, because the deep state is getting extremely desperate. A lot of them have been arrested or put under house arrest by sealed indictments, if you've been following that story. So they may have only one shot left, and this might be it. So that's all I'm saying. That's pure speculation. I don't have any reason to believe that, other than it would seem that if they're going to go to the trouble of manipulating a storm, and there again, that's speculation. I'm not saying for sure it is, but I'm saying it's a very likely scenario, because that low pressure cell moving northwest is unusual. It's very unusual. Just like Hurricane Sandy was very definitely a manipulated storm, following that same pattern, coming against the grain, coming against the normal easterly flow of the jet streams and the trade wind patterns, etc. So, but could that be the staging for a terrorist activity that would be like a false flag? And I'll just leave it at that, because that's speculation, and I'll clearly mark it as speculation and give it a fairly low probability of occurring. But in these days, you never know. But It's like the conditions are right. Let's just put it that way. Another aspect of news regarding the storm is that as of now, I just got this report from the airlines that 2,700 flights have been canceled. Now, flights that might be leaving other areas or might be in other parts of the world could be backed up because some of the connecting flights or where that plane has to go, etc., is up in that northeastern area. Tremendous amount of, and of course, this is a high traffic time of year. Right after the first of the year, this would be stranding a lot of people that were, say, extending their Christmas vacation, trying to get back home, stuck in an airport who knows where, or stuck in an airport at one of these locations up in the Northeast, unable to get out because their destination is shut down. So certainly a big backlog in air traffic. Okay, enough of that. I think I've covered the aspects, and next week I'll do some more reporting on the outcome of this storm and some of the physics of this cell. I'm currently watching it, and it has not completed its path yet. So next week I'll clean up some of the details. Looking in retrospect, when we can look back and look on and see what was going on with this storm. So looking into the future, now I started this show by talking about there being a bright future. Well, I feel bad for these people up in the Northeast, and the whole United States is being hit by this, and now out in the West Coast, even Washington, Seattle, and up the coast, they have seen severe weather activity. So we'll see where this goes. But with all this storm activity aside, I see a very, very bright future. And the reason being is investment is coming back into the United States. And whether you like it or not, this is simply a reality. The investments, there was one company, I believe it was Apple, bringing $300 billion that they had parked offshore, bringing it back into the United States for investment. And what does this mean? Look at where the advancements are coming right now. They're coming in terms of large batteries and some things that, unfortunately, I don't have the ability to release information. It's coming out probably in the next week or so. But the batteries, that's something that most people don't think about. You have your car battery. Very few people have batteries in their house to run their house. It's something that's not really visible on the market yet. But that is coming soon. Now, you may not be aware of this, but a lot of you have purchased, and in your house, say you have sensitive electronic equipment like televisions, especially the LCD or the flat screen, what we call flat screen, or computer terminals or computers or DVD players, routers, things like that in your house are very sensitive to voltage. And the central power company wants to control the voltage, but they're unable to do it. So you go out and at great expense buy a UPS. It's a universal power supply. And most of them have a battery in it. So if you consider this, most of you already have a battery in your house. And it's not a very big battery, typically lithium ion construction. Solid state, in other words, not a liquid-based battery, and that is enough to run your TV or your computer for a short while, maybe a few minutes, maybe 10 minutes, and that allows you to shut your equipment off because it's beeping at you. It's like telling you that it has taken over, that the power has failed, there's a brownout, or there's been a surge, and this is protecting your equipment, but you better shut down your equipment. And this basically is to protect you from variations in the voltage on the power lines coming into your house. But you already have one of these in your house with a battery. Some of the less expensive ones do not have a battery, and so they don't have the ability to run your equipment, but they'll protect against brownout or surges and basically shut off. But the average one today, for a little bit more money, you get a battery in there. And so you already have this piece of equipment. So what does that piece of equipment do? It controls the voltage for your equipment. So if you have a brownout, a slight loss in power on your power line, this device will take the power that's coming in, although it's lower than standard voltage, 110 or 220, whatever is coming into your house, typically 220 volt service, and then that's split apart into single phase 120. That's our standard in the United States. Foreign standards are different, but that's the United States standard. Is when you buy a computer or a device or a blender or whatever, you're plugging that into single phase 120 volt AC. Okay, so that's what the UPS is doing. So you already have a device that is controlling the voltage in your house. You already have this. You're paying a lot of money for this because the central power company is remiss in their obligation to control the voltage. And they're fighting all kinds of problems. They probably have internal problems within the power generation complex itself, but more so just the variability of people turning on devices, turning them off, the whole infrastructure of delivering the power, etc. And so on a perfect day, things go pretty well. And in the United States, you have pretty stable power. But let me tell you, in foreign countries, that is not the case at all. You may be days without power. You probably have many times per day brownout conditions or surges because all of a sudden somebody fixes something, they bring it back online, and there's a drop in the production of energy for a little bit, but then it comes back and over surges trying to compensate, so they overcompensate. And in foreign countries, you have a serious control problem for voltage. But the point is, you in the so-called advanced first world countries have a problem, and it's going to be an ever-increasing problem with the central power companies maintaining the voltage correctly. And so you're already paying for this device. So let's imagine that instead of let's say $200, $200, $200. You say you've got three of these in your house, and you're paying, between $75 and $200 each, depending on the quality, et cetera, the number of output outlets, et cetera, how many you have to have in your house, down with the TV in the basement or the computer room or, the kids' rooms with computers, and you start to buy more and more of these. You're starting to put a considerable investment into voltage control. But what if you could take that investment, put a little bit more with it, and have a battery backup supply for the house, etc.? And what if you could do away with that central power company and replace it with a different source of energy? Now, that's, to most people, you'd go, well, how would you do that? That's ridiculous. You have nuclear power plants, you have coal generating plants. But that technology is coming along, and it's not going to be in the form of solar panels. It's not going to be in the form of three-blade wind generators. And so my discussion here is about the future. The future of energy is going to look very different in 10 years. The landscape and the source of energy. And that's something that I'm personally working on in the background. Many of you already know about this with the wing generator, etc. But in a distributed energy scenario, which I talk about in my book, McCanny Wing Generator World Energy Project, I talk about, and this is the probably one of the most important terms you're going to learn, and it's going to be something that's very germane to your lives in the next 2 to 5 years. It's called distributed energy. In other words, you are going to control the voltage at your house. So it doesn't matter if the voltage comes in low or high or whatever. You're going to control it, and that means batteries in your house. And that means batteries in your automobile. You're going to become a battery society, a society that has, and the price of batteries will be coming down. But the question is, where does this energy come from? And literally, it's the answer is that it'll come from the wind. But it will not come from these three-blade wind generator monstrosities that dot the countryside. Those are going to go the way of the dinosaur. In 10 years, you're going to see most of those replaced with completely different devices. And there's very little to salvage from those. But that's part of the future. Where's the future? In electrical automobiles, electrical transportation, replacing gasoline and petroleum-based fuels, diesel. And there'll still be a market for some of that, but as battery technology becomes more available, it becomes what we call energy density. The energy density of the batteries becomes higher and higher, which is going to happen because batteries typically are very massive. They're very heavy. We consider, a battery for your car. The average person can pick it up and move it. But if they start getting much bigger than that, you need a machine literally to pick up the batteries and move them because they're so heavy. That kind of technology, those constraints are going to change. But the biggest issue is that the energy density, in other words, in a physical size unit, 1 foot by 1 foot by 1 foot, how much energy can you pack in there in terms of electrical energy, and how much of it is retrievable? What's the efficiency? So all of this is improving. So number one, we are going to become a society of batteries. Society of batteries. Just remember that. And that you're going to have it in your house, in your automobile, etc. But we have to get rid of carbon-based fuels, which are basically petrol and coal and natural gas. Those are carbon-based fuels. And it's not because we're going to have runaway greenhouse effect and have global warming. It's because of the oxygen being consumed. And, of course, we have to get away from nuclear. Nuclear is a disaster from beginning to end. It should have never gotten off the ground. And even as a physicist, most physicists believe that nuclear power is the answer. But what we're realizing now is the cleanup. So also in the future for the younger generation is the cleanup of nuclear power. And this is going to be a horrendous task. There's a show I did a number of, I believe it was in 2017, and I talked about the massive amount of nuclear waste. And some people say, well, why don't we just shoot it off into the sun? So what I did is I developed a model rocket, not a little rocket like the backyard rocket that the kids play with, but a prototype, it would be a better word, rocket, that would lift, based on today's rocket technology, heavy lift rocket that would lift nuclear fuel up into outer space and then shoot it off into the sun. Okay, well, all of this takes energy, all of this takes reusable rockets, etc. But how many rockets would it take, how many rocket launches would it take to take all of the spent nuclear fuel in the world and ship it off to the sun? Because it's one thing to get into low Earth orbit. It's another thing to take it from low Earth orbit and shoot it away from Earth's gravitational field at what we call escape velocity, which is, let me just give you some numbers here. Low Earth orbit velocity is around 17,000 miles an hour. Escape velocity from Earth is around 25,000 miles per hour. So you have to take this mass and get it into low Earth orbit and then have a rocket that can get it from 17,000 to 25,000 miles per hour and then shoot it in a direction to where, yeah, it could be sent into the sun, where it would simply burn up and hopefully not cause big explosions that change our weather. But the number of launches was astronomical. In other words, we don't have the technology, we don't have the money to simply launch the residue that's now existent in the nuclear, you know, nuclear waste, basically. We don't have the ability or the money to get rid of this stuff. So we have to stop using it, and this is going to be dumped onto future generations to somehow clean this up, because here's the problem. The high energy content nuclear fuel that's being used today is being processed from nuclear bomb grade fuel. And the nuclear reactors were never designed to burn this. And so what they do is they do not burn it completely. There's a certain amount of residue left, and that residue gives off heat. So the casks, the steel casks that these are contained in, require cooling. So every time you finish burning a fuel rod in a nuclear reactor, it goes into a container, and that container requires cooling. Okay, so the more you burn, the more cooling you have to do to cool down the rods that have been spent. And as you can see, it's a point of no return process where it's not going to be sustainable. It's simply not sustainable. But this is going to be dumped on future generations. And being a physicist, it's something that I've looked at very closely, and it's an almost insurmountable problem. But the first step is to shut down nuclear power plants worldwide and have an energy source that is clean. So wind is the source, and as I'm going to just keep repeating it, because as soon as I say wind, people imagine those three-blade wind generators, which simply don't work. Most of the wind blows right through them. When you see them turning out there, even in a strong wind, it's because they have a motor inside that's making them turn. They cannot start. The wind will not start those three blades moving all by itself. So a tremendous amount of energy is used in just keeping those blades rotating to the point where they might be able to pick up some wind energy. So it's one of the big myths. In fact, in December, this past December in my paid cast, the whole month was based on exposing the myth of alternative energy and talking about real solutions. So that would be good if you're interested in this topic of energy from natural sources. Go listen to that month, my paid cast. So very much well worth your time to get up to speed and conquer some of the myths, understand the myths that have been taught to you by engineering groups, etc., who are there to make a profit, who get a government subsidy by selling those products and installing them. And without a government subsidies, they simply wouldn't exist. So number two, in terms of a bright future, shutting down nuclear power, replacing it with real alternative power. And I don't even like to use the word alternative, because it has so many deceptive meanings attached to it. So number two, cleaning up nuclear fuel. Number three, we have major natural problems on Earth. We have earthquakes and we have volcanoes, but one of the most serious volcanic threats to Earth is Yellowstone National Park, the volcano at Yellowstone. And I have a write-up on this on my webpage. Just search for the write-up on Yellowstone volcano and how we have to drain the lake. And the reason for this is historically there have been three major volcanic eruptions from Yellowstone crater, and all three of them have been when there was a lake. And so what happens is the lake, the water in the lake, when the earth ruptures and the eruption begins, the water pours down into a crevice, hits the magma, and it starts a chain reaction. As the water hits the magma, which is right below the surface, it starts to explode into steam. And as the hole expands due to these explosions, then more and more water pours down until you get basically a super volcano explosion. And that's the problem with the volcano at Yellowstone. Now, throughout the ages, we've had major volcanic eruptions on Earth. Some of them are not preventable, like the big explosion at Krakatoa or the explosions up at Iceland. Some of these we do not have any ability because the water tables that are pouring in to create the explosions, and by the way, that is something that standard science will not tell you, is that the cause of an explosion in a volcano is where water drops down onto the magma, and basically you have a steam engine where it simply blows a hole in the out the top of a crater. The lake at Yellowstone is different. We have the ability to drain that, so this is another world mega project. In fact, what I am going to be working on myself are these mega projects. So one of them is to drain that water out of the lake at Yellowstone, and we can't wait until government agencies wake up to these major problems. The next issue is water, and it's hard to put these in order, what is more important, but literally we now have 7 billion people on planet Earth. There is the problem is not a lack of water, it's a lack of water management. We have a tremendous amount of water on planet Earth, but the other problem is that the concentrations of a population are near the ocean, a lot of times in regions where there are not good water sources. And so literally there is going to be a shortage of water on planet Earth. And that's something I'm working on. There'll be some major announcements coming here very shortly. You will see that on my webpage, I am selling, I'm now a marketer, in other words, I have a product line of what are called AWGs, atmospheric water generator, possibly a term that you have never heard of before. But people who have studied this topic and this population situation on Earth, and also who have studied the history of looking for clean water sources, they understand that drilling wells is not, many times is not fruitful. Or even if they last for a while, they become polluted or they become dry or depleted. And once there's a water source that's found that's underground, it's limited. The people get in there and take the water out, and then you have to keep drilling farther and farther down. That's what's going on in California right now. The drought has caused farmers to drill deeper and deeper into the available aquifer, and the water is simply not available. So they're using up available water sources. That's what's happening with the Oglala Water Reservoir that stretches from Winnipeg down to northern Texas through Nebraska. It's an underground water source that is being depleted. And that's where people like Warren Buffett has made billions of dollars by tapping into that, buying land on top of the Oglala Reservoir, and then selling it off. There are other major water reservoirs in the world, but the question is, do we have a water shortage issue? The answer is literally no. We have the water pouring off Antarctica. We have the water pouring off Greenland, and these have to be harvested like a product. And so there is literally a big business for anybody who understands. In fact, there's a guy, I forget his name right offhand, but he has invented, I believe he actually has patented, large water bags. These are vast floating bags of that you could fill up with water from a rich water source and then pull them with a boat. The unfortunate thing with any water solution is that it takes energy. So that links water to energy. The ability to, especially with, say, water extraction units from the atmosphere, AWGs, it takes a lot of energy to run these. So once again, we couple the issue of water shortage with energy. So it's imperative that we solve the energy issue. And that's one thing I'm working on. I'm also working on the water issue. And people who have done their homework have calculated that the amount of water in the atmosphere is sufficient, more than sufficient, to fuel our water demands, to provide the water, the fresh water needed by the world. Okay, so, but once again, it comes back to energy. So these are solutions that are going to come forth. So that's why I see the future of the world as being bright. And then population control. Now, there's a consideration that we should simply be allowed to populate the world. And the unfortunate thing is that the people who are the poorest, who have the fewest resources, are having lots of kids. And the people who have access to resources and have a much higher standard of living are having fewer kids. And so there's an imbalance in the ability. Now, one of the issues is that let's say that a third of the world population right now is under the age of 20. And a quarter of the world population, these are just round numbers, a quarter of the world population is under the age of 10. That means that we have a large number of people living in third world countries that are going to start having babies at age 13 to 15. And so the world population is hitting an exponential growth curve in the poorer populations. There's actually a decline of population in the wealthier sectors of the population. But population distribution and understanding this is something that the younger populations of this planet are going to have to start to deal with. Because of the concentration of population, actually there's plenty of land if that land were arable. So I'm out of time. I'm going to continue on this theme in future weeks. Remember the sale on my webpage, I didn't have time to take it down yet. The 10% plus extra 5% off on my water filters is still there. Will be there up until this coming Monday, January 8th. Go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.